Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 472. Today, Celine asks, how do you find a good title for a story or a novel? I usually struggle to title my work. I'm wondering whether you need a different set of skills from the writing itself. I guess a title shouldn't be too generic. A more specific title might help readers remember the story. But at the same time, it shouldn't give away too much plot, especially no plot twist. I've been frustrated with some stories in the past whose title gave me too much information. I know that some people, like Dean Wesley Smith, don't have that problem because they get their inspiration from titles. He uses half-titles from old magazines that he matches together whenever they inspire him. So he has his title even before he writes the first word of his story. But do you have any advice for those of us who write the story first and then get stuck finding a good title? Advice? Not sure. I can offer a few tricks. Maybe a few vague ideas. There's a few different approaches to a title and what a title should do. What a title should do that pretty much everyone agrees on is it should bring the story to mind when you're thinking back on it, which means that it should be sort of singularly representative of the story. Now, it doesn't have to actually have anything to do with the story itself. For example, Umberto Eco has this thing where he believes that the title should reveal nothing about a story, even in retrospect. And yet he always finds titles that become uniquely bound to his stories. The Name of the Rose is the perfect example. Beautiful novel. In the film, there is an explicit connection made between one of the characters and the title. However, that was something done for the film that Umberto Eco really, really loathed. He hated it. He thought it undercut his entire point, which was to come up with an entirely meaningless title, so that it revealed nothing about the story. But the title itself worked, both because it has a wonderful cadence, it flows off the tongue really well, and because it does evoke something about the story. Very, very subtly and indirectly, it evokes a time period. And if you're really, really sly, you realize that maybe, contrary to his intention, it also evokes a plot thread. It is, of course, a riff on the Shakespeare line from Romeo and Juliet. What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Where Juliet is musing about the significance of loyalty to her family in the wake of the overwhelming infatuation she feels for Romeo. Now, of course, one of the minor threads in The Name of the Rose that becomes really important for the character development of the narrator is that he falls in love, and he's a novice monk, and he's not allowed to. So evoking Romeo and Juliet, a tale of forbidden love, as you're going into this tale of forbidden loves, plural, is very, very appropriate and kind of sly. But the reason that it sticks in the mind is because it flows off the tongue well, and because it's that callback to that cultural touchstone. Everyone has heard the line from Romeo and Juliet, even if they don't know that's where it's from, even if they've never read the play. It's part of the normal parlance. Callbacks to literary ancestry are a great way to do titles, because they are instantly memorable and nobody really knows why. And occasionally people will discover the same trick, which has annoyed me to no end with my book, And Then She Was Gone. When I wrote And Then She Was Gone, it was the only book available in English that had that title. Now, there are 5 books that have that title. All of them callbacks to the Agatha Christie book, And Then There Were None, which itself is a callback to the poem, 10 Little Indians, which originally had a much more offensive name, that structures the story, which is a nursery rhyme from the British imperialist days and becomes the structure for the story of 10 Little Indians, which is the foundational slasher story, etc. And the whole poem is a countdown, and when the last little Indian dies, and then there were none. And in this case, in the Agatha Christie book, And Then There Were None, the final line actually does give away the end of the story, but you would get that from the first page of the book anyway, so it's not really too much of a spoiler. But my title, And Then She Was Gone, is a callback to And Then There Were None. I do a lot of stuff like that, particularly in the Lantham series. A Ghostly Christmas Present is a deliberate riff on The Ghost of Christmas Present from The Christmas Carol. He Ain't Heavy, well, that's the title of an old war song about a guy who carries a wounded comrade off the field and doesn't notice the burden that he's carrying because his love for his companion is so great that the weight that he's carrying doesn't matter to him. He ain't heavy, he's my brother, it says. Well, the book is about friendship, and particularly about a friendship between two old war buddies that creates a hell of a mess. And that theme is paralleled at multiple levels in the book. And so that was when I titled afterwards. The title I had going in didn't work at all. So at the end, I realized that the song He Ain't Heavy really mirrors what's going on in the book, so I cribbed the title. So that's one way to do it, is by cultural callbacks. Another way to do it is something short and punchy that makes sense only in retrospect. For example, my book Silent Victor makes sense in retrospect because the mystery revolves around a guy named Victor who witnesses a theft and who is silenced. He can't speak. He's drugged up in such a way that he can't talk, and he is not able to give his testimony, and he's not able to write. He has terrible aphasia. It's a big point in the book, so he is Silent Victor. The Resurrection Junket is an example of another approach to a titling convention. In the case of the Resurrection Junket, what I have done is I have basically given you the premise in the title. A junket is a tour that is gone on by people going to strange new places and frequently writing about it, and resurrection is what happens if you die and you are raised from the dead. Well, the story is about someone who is going along on a terraforming mission as a historian and can only get to this distant planet by being killed and then reconstructed at the other end. Therefore, she is going on a resurrection junket. Some other great titles in history. The Grapes of Wrath is another cultural callback to the Battle Hymn of the Republic. He has loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. He has trampled out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. Which itself is a callback to the book of Revelation and the cups of wrath that God pours out upon the world in the form of plagues and wars and destruction as the unfolding of the apocalypse proceeds. So the Grapes of Wrath refers by two jumps indirectly to a fait accompli, a coming judgment, an inevitable doom. And of course, the Grapes of Wrath is about an apocalypse that drives a family across the country towards a hope that turns into their inevitable doom. All of these are really great ways to approach titling. What I personally look for in a title as a reader, when I'm going to something, I'm looking for something that jumps off the shelf, that seems to promise something interesting, something unusual. And this can be done either by any of the techniques we've talked about before or by complete understatement. Like Lawrence Block's The Girl with the Deep Blue Eyes. Nothing about that title will prepare you for what is in the story, but it does tell you that whatever is going to happen here is motivated by a girl with deep blue eyes, and in fact it is. Robert Ludlum used his MacGuffins as his title generators. The Bourne Identity is about a guy named Jason Bourne who's trying to find out his identity. There's great titles that are basically what they say on the tin. Star Wars, it's about a war in space. Who'd have thought it? Star Trek, it's about exploring space. Who'd have thought it? And yet, those work tremendously well. There's also titles that promise more than they reveal. They act as a sort of peek or tease about what's going to come. The Twilight Zone, The Outer Limits, Total Recall. All of these are titles that tease you with the notion that there's going to be a revelation at the end. A great example of one of these is Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes, which both is a tease title and is a cultural callback to Macbeth from the scene where the witches are brewing up and doing something that was at the time thought of as very, very evil. And then the hero walks on stage and one of the witches says, "By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes."
And so it's a tease in the sense that it's got that sense of impending doom about it, but it's also a callback that gives you a hint as to the nature of the story, because the whole story is about the fulfilling of desires that should not be fulfilled, which is what the tale of Macbeth is about as well. So there's a thematic resonance between Macbeth and Something Wicked This Way Comes, but there's also a thematic resonance with the tale of Dr. Faustus, which is not referenced in the title for Something Wicked. Sometimes a title should set a mood. My book Smoke Rings, the Ray Bradbury book Dandelion Wine, or The Last Days of Summer. These are things that they're intended to evoke a mood right away. They tell you what kind of feeling you're in for in the book. They don't tell you anything else, but they give you an idea of what kind of feeling you're going to be feeling as you read the book. These are all different ways that you can come up with a good title. And of course, when all else fails, you can use the technique that poets used to use, which was to make a line from the book the title of the poem. Frequently in English poetry, either the first or the last line of the poem would be the title, and the experience of the poem would partly depend on either unfolding from the title or in leading up to the title in a way that was unexpected. And that's something else that can work very, very well. Those are some different ways I know of. Anyone else have any good ideas on how to come up with interesting titles? Please drop me a line and let me know, and I'll have it in a future episode. Also, look in the show notes here. You'll see a link to a blog post I did on coming up with kick-ass titles. I did that a few years ago, but some of the techniques in there I don't cover here, and that might also be interesting reading for you. Thank you very much for writing in, Celine. It's always a pleasure to hear from you, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.